Welcome to Inspired Radio with your host, author, filmmaker, and entrepreneur, Lisa Nicole Bell. The Inspired Life is a weekly show dedicated to inspiring listeners to think critically and live amazing lives based on the six key areas of inspired living: spiritual growth, thriving relationships, financial wealth, career and educational achievement, optimal health, and personal development. Every week, Lisa Nicole Bell brings you her signature brand of inspiration and information from experts in the six key areas who teach timeless principles on successful living. Expect to get relevant information about how to live well on your own terms and be inspired to take new action that will transform your life. And now, the inspiration icon herself, Lisa Nicole Bell.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I am Lisa Nicole Bell coming to you live this morning from Los Angeles after a fantastic weekend. Got a lot done and had a lot of fun. And now I am preparing to head down to San Diego for the weekend. Going to have a little fun down there before we prepare for the Thanksgiving holiday. As a quick reminder, the Divine Inspirations Home Study Course is still on sale for $100 off, bringing it to just $99. So you want to make sure you take advantage of that rate now, as the prices will go up in the new year. It's a great way to get recentered and refocused and really get clear on what you want to have happen in your life in 2010, and also to get the actual knowledge and skill set necessary to make those things happen. So visit lifewithinspiration.com to take a look at that. Today we have a very special guest joining us to discuss today's topic, effective parenting practices. And this woman is amazing. She has formal training, and she also has an amazing intuition and wisdom as a result of having raised three daughters herself. I know her personally, and I absolutely adore her. So if you are a parent, you'll find today's show fun, enlightening, and inspiring. I never leave this woman's presence not feeling inspired to do something. So I'm really excited to share her with all the listeners today. And whether you're a parent or a future parent or just a mentor to a young person, I think you'll find today's show really informative, and it'll give you something new to consider as you participate in the lives of the youth around you. Quote of the week: making the decision to have a child is momentous. It is to decide forever to have your heart go walking around outside your body. That's by Elizabeth Stone. I'll read that again. Making the decision to have a child is momentous. It is to decide forever to have your heart go walking around outside your body. I absolutely love that. I think it's totally on point, because your child is a part of you, an extension of you, and it really drives home the explanation for why so many parents struggle to loosen the reins and to let go as their children are getting older and evolving into teens and young adults. It's a challenge, because it is. It's a piece of your heart that's walking around outside of your body. So today we're going to explore even more of that, and today's expert has a lot of insight in that area. This week's easing topic is tending to your garden. Last week we started up this whole series on the garden of your life and all of the analogies and great metaphors that come along with that. We're analyzing that. People are really enjoying the series. So if you want to sign up for the weekly easing, visit inspiredliferadio.com and enter your information in the top right-hand corner. Not only will you get the amazing easing, but you will also be on top of what's happening next with Inspired Life Radio. So if you'd like to call in for today's show, the phone number is 347-215-7759. Again, that's 347-215-7759. You are in for an absolute treat today. Betty Alkazian is a licensed marriage and family therapist, parenting coach, and nationally recognized parenting expert who works with families to ease the challenges of raising children. Betty has also worked for many years as a parent educator, lecturer, and writer. Through her private coaching practice, Balanced Parenting, Betty provides tools and insights to help families achieve, restore, and maintain balance at home. Betty has been married to her husband, Jeff, for 24 years, and they are the parents of three daughters, ages 9 to 18. Welcome to Inspired Life Radio, Betty.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, absolutely. I have to first say that I love your passion for what you do. Anyone who knows me knows that I am probably one of the most enthusiastic and high off of life people ever. And I love working with other people who are the same way and who wake up totally connected to their purpose and ready to get out there and create positive news for themselves and others, and you are definitely one of those people. Tell me how you got into your line of work of counseling families.
Oh, wow, that's a complex question. I think I was kind of born to it.
Wow.
Honestly, there's a part of me that felt as a kid that I just needed to hurry up and grow up because I had some quest to do here on this planet. And as I grew up and I got older and I took a counseling class in college as an undergraduate and met my mentor in college and just kind of eased my way into the graduate program. And just the more I got into it, the more I said to myself, oh my gosh, this is so what I need to be doing. And the whole parenting thing has always fascinated me even before I had kids. And then, of course, once I had kids and I had no idea what I was doing, I was compelled to research and really figure out how to do it in the best possible way. So I'm still reading, I'm still learning, still trying to figure it out. But it's
That's
good
important.
Stuff. Yes.
I love that because it sounds like your evolution was a natural one. And it also sounds like, you know, your focus was doing something that not only you had the gift and talent for, but also something that you genuinely enjoyed. And you can totally tell that you are you have a sincere passion for helping families, particularly parents. Tell me about balanced parenting. I know that's your practice. What kinds of things do you offer through balanced parenting?
Oh, we offer so many different things. I have a private practice, which is psychotherapy as well as parent coaching. People come into my office. I also do what I call parenting parties, almost like, you know, the old Tupperware parties. People invite their friends over and we get together, and there always has to be food involved because that's what a party is about. And we talk about parenting. And, you know, for me, it's really fun. You get me started and I can't stop. So just, you know, these poor parents don't know what they're in for when they come. I also do classes on different topics. I do some teleconferences and webinars, and I have two support groups, one for parents of preschoolers, one for parents of teens and tweens. I do all sorts of stuff in the hopes of helping people, you know, make it a little bit easier each day.
Well, I think, you know, the other great thing that I love about your practice is that it's comprehensive in nature. And with you having raised children yourself, you know firsthand some of the things that they're facing. Sometimes we see people who don't have any kids who are like, hey, I'm the expert on parenting. And it's like, well, maybe not. Because, you know, it's different. Like you said yourself, you know, even if you had studied parenting before, actually having children presents an entirely different landscape in which to apply what you've learned. And obviously there's a lot of trial and error, and you have to continue to evolve. So what was it like when you went from being a practitioner and an expert to being a parent?
That's a great question. And I crack myself up when I think about it because I did have friends and family who had kids before I did. And I watched, and I was learning, and of course, from my perspective, I thought, oh, that's not how I'll do it. I had all sorts of ideas of thinking, you know, that I had it all, you know, figured out in my head, and I was studying it because I also had clients who had kids, and I felt like I better figure out what's going on here, and I have to sound educated. I was actually still an intern at that point, and so, you know, what did they call that, armchair parenting? From, you know,
yes.
From an outside perspective, I thought I was going to be absolutely the perfect parent. And then, of course, once I had children, you know, it was sort of like, oh, my gosh, what do I do with this thing? And it's a totally different experience on the inside. And I definitely think it enables me to be more helpful to parents because I do live it every day. I'm still raising my children. And I have three daughters, and they all have very different personalities and very different needs. So I am still learning on each one of them because they need to be parented differently.
Mm, so yeah, I think
Sorry, go ahead.
I think that's a really great point. I just wanted to jump in and say I think that's a really great point. You said that they have three distinctly different personalities and that you're parenting them in that way. And I think that's really important because parenting isn't a cookie-cutter thing, and sometimes we think that, you know, if we have more than one child in a family that we kind of, it's a hand-me-down parenting style, but they, you know, children do have different personalities, and I personally believe that birth order does affect a child's personality to varying degrees. So I think it's very conscious of you to say, you know, my youngest has a different set of needs than my oldest did, and, and you know, adjust to that.
And not only do they have different needs, but I'm a different parent to each of them because of my experience. You know, 18 years ago, when my oldest daughter was a baby, I was a very different person than I am today, not only because I'm older and wiser, but also my experience. So I'm probably more relaxed on some things with my youngest than I am, than I was with my oldest 18 years ago. And, you know, it's an evolution. We're all growing and learning and figuring it all out. So I definitely think that I'm a different parent than I was. And, you know, maybe I'm not necessarily better, but just different.
Right.
But hopefully wiser. That's certainly the goal.
Well, I think, and I mean, that to me is a demonstration that you're learning and that you are, you know, actually taking the lessons from your first two to apply to your third or from your first to apply to your second and so forth. And that's what it's all about, is learning and then applying what you're learning. And I also love that you mentioned earlier that you're still learning. You know, it's not a situation where you're like, yes, I have this all figured out, I've got this under control, because there is always something to learn. There is always a new way to grow. So I also think that's really fantastic.
And that's really my philosophy in life. I just think I am a forever student, and I hope to inspire and motivate other people to feel the same way. We can always be learning and growing as people, even if our kids are grown and out of the house. We can always be learning and growing. And that's why I love hanging with you, Lisa, because you inspire me to want to be a better person.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, it is true. And I think, you know, birds of a learning feather flock together. And, you know, people who have that insatiable appetite for life and for knowledge and for enlightenment do tend to, you know, lift each other up. There is that pull on, in the upward direction. So I appreciate that, and I absolutely feel the same way. So coming up, we're going to continue the conversation with Betty about balanced parenting. Plus, I'm going to give away a fabulous prize and announce next week's giveaway. So stay tuned.
Positive Twos for Success that will change your life. Divine Store has everything you need to transform your life into the work of art God intended it to be. Whether you're trying to lose weight, trying to create better relationships, or trying to achieve financial wealth, you'll find exactly what you need at the Divine Store. We offer books, interactive courses, MP3 downloads, and more. You'll find a wealth of resources to help you find your way in life. You'll find a wealth of resources to help you live your life best. Visit us today at www.thedivinestore.com.
Welcome back to The Inspired Life. Here's your host, Lisa Nicole Bell.
Welcome back. We are here with Betty Alkazian live discussing balanced parenting. If you'd like to chat with Betty and I, give us a call at 347-215-7759. Again, that's 347-215-7759. Betty, I want to get your thoughts on three different stages of parenting. And granted, this isn't anything official. I just made these up. So, my thought process is that the time in infancy is probably challenging in the sense that you're adjusting. I mean, I think that's probably one of the biggest adjustments aside from the empty nest syndrome is that, you know, now if you're a new parent, it's like, oh my goodness, I'm not me anymore. I'm not just a wife or a husband anymore. Now I'm a parent. Like, that's a big deal. What do you see parents dealing with during that time? Are they freaking out? What's going on?
That is an excellent question because it is really such a huge leap and one that I think many people can't even begin to anticipate what it's going to feel like. I know for myself it was shocking, and really for many people it becomes a crisis on so many different levels. First of all, you're in a position with this baby trying to figure out, oh my gosh, what do I do? Before instincts really, before they kick in, before we are able to figure it out much more naturally and recognize our baby's cries, it's very hard and it's very overwhelming, especially when we have hormones raging through our bodies postpartum. But in addition to caring for the baby, there's the identity crisis that often comes, whether mom is on maternity leave or has chosen to no longer work outside the home and stay home with the baby, it becomes, oh my gosh, who am I? And the baby is all-encompassing, all-consuming. Suddenly it's like, wait a minute, who am I? The marriage often goes into a crisis time because the husband often feels third on the totem pole because baby comes first and mom's needs have to be taken care of so mom can take good care of the baby. And then dad, so even though dad falls in love with the baby too and hopefully he's very much a part of it, he says, wait, what happened? I had this great wife. Where did she go? And so very often the relationship can go into crisis. So it is a very huge transition and very sensitive of you to realize what a huge, huge leap that is. Everybody begins to question, who am I? Where do I stand, you know, in this world now, and what is it supposed to look like? So it takes some time to adjust.
Yeah, I think a lot of new moms, and I mean, Justin even processing this in my head, I just think it would be, I agree with you, overwhelming. And I think, you know, you've been whoever you are for 20, 30, 40 years, and now you have an entirely different aspect of your identity that's being introduced to you. So you're not only dealing with the emotions of, I'm a mom now, what does that look like for me? Am I the type who wears mom jeans or lowriders? Like, what type of mom am I going to be? You're sorting that out. And you've also got this little person who depends on you for everything.
And in addition, something that I was really surprised by was I felt an incredible sense of isolation. Here I was in the house. It took me 3 hours to get out the door with this little baby, just to pack the diaper bag, get myself showered in between feedings and diapers and all of those things that were going on, and I was so overwhelmed. Literally 3 hours to get out the door, and then I had to time it in between feedings and naps and all of those, and the just the thought of putting her in the car, it just took over. So the thought of going out, and then it was like, well, where do I go? You know, at the beginning, you don't want to take a baby into public because you don't want to expose them to germs and all of that. So I felt incredibly isolated at first because I just decided to avoid that, and I stayed home a lot, and most of my friends didn't have babies yet. I didn't really have a group around me. So I often encourage moms to find other moms and to connect with other moms in similar situations, even if it's online, to find play groups. There are moms clubs and moms organizations in every community. And I highly encourage people to connect with other moms because I guarantee you, you're not the only one feeling those feelings, whatever they may be. And to get that support and to feel connected to other moms and to ask questions.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, that you're not the only one, because it's so easy. And, I think it's an interesting point about the isolation, because a lot of times people are like, oh, aren't you excited? You have to be a baby. This is such an exciting time. Well, yeah, but the sheer volume of emotion that you're feeling can be too much. I mean, you're trying to form this attachment with the baby. You're trying to keep the baby alive and feed it and keep it clean. And, you know, you're right. The marriage does suffer, and it is a lot. And you do feel like, you know, I'm not doing it right, or how come no one told me, or how come no one's helping me? And even though you have people,
feedback. It's not the kind of feedback that we might have had at work before we have the baby, where, you know, somebody said, oh, great job, that turned out great. With a baby, the only feedback you get is maybe that the baby stops crying, or, you know, that the baby goes pee-pee or poop, and you think, oh, good, but it's actually feedback that they got fed and that everything's working okay. You realize, oh my gosh, what have I turned into? I'm so excited about a poopy diaper.
Turned into a mom. Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I think the point that you made about the marriage was excellent. I read Dr. Laura's book, The Proper Care and Feeding of Husbands, and one of the things that she talked about was how when the baby comes, for the first, and it's not just, you know, right in postpartum, it's the first 5 or 6, 7 years sometimes, the shift from, you know, focusing on this marriage and maintaining the marriage and keeping it healthy to baby, 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 kid, 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 kid. And it is a lot of responsibility, especially for working moms who are trying to balance their careers and their lives and their social activities and all these different things. But I think what we have to remember is that without the husband and the marriage, there would be no baby. So we have to really, really nurture that. And I think what it requires is a shift in our intention. Because when you're a couple and it's just the two of you, you're kind of spending time together and interacting by default. You have your time to make love and to talk about the day and to plan your life and all these different things. And then when you have, like you said, this consuming little one who's taking up your time and attention and you want to play with them and take care of them and think about their future, it's very easy for the marriage to become an afterthought. So I think you have to set the intention that you're going to carve out that time for each other, whether that's, you know, having a Friday night where the baby goes to grandma's and you guys get to just focus on each other. I do think you have to really make that investment if you want to maintain a strong marriage and get through it.
Yes, and what you're saying is so important, Lisa. I talk to parents every day about this and how important it is to realize that our parenting period is really a small portion of the overall marriage. And my hope is that when the kids move out, the parents look at each other and say, woohoo, the kids are gone, now we have time for each other, you know, and to be excited instead of looking at each other and saying, who are you, and do I really even want to be with you? So the way that parents can set that intention that you mentioned is really to realize that I kind of look at it like in a pyramid kind of thing. At the very top of the pyramid needs to be the parent as the individual, mom and dad, individually. If I take good care of myself, if I, you know, take care of my stress, if I eat right, if I exercise, I get the rest I need, then I'm going to bring my best self to my marriage. And when my marriage is good and my husband is happy with me and we're connecting with each other, then by default, the kids are okay. The kids are happy because the marriage is really the foundation on which that family lives and resides. So when I've taken care of me and I'm all good, and then I've taken care of my marriage and that's solid, then the kids feel safe and secure that all is well with the world. I can learn, grow, develop, explore, and do all the things that kids are supposed to do to climb that developmental ladder, because I know mom and dad are taking care of the important stuff. I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to be a buffer for their marriage. So we have to take care of ourselves. That's what gives our kids that really healthy platform on which to jump off and be the most amazing people they can be.
I think you make a great point about the development, which kind of segues into the elementary school kids and what they're seeing. And I think, you know, one thing that parents forget is that in spite of how resilient children are, they are modeling what they see, and they can't help it. It's a subconscious reaction because we're a product of our environment. And if we see that the way we resolve conflict is through name-calling and throwing things, or if we see that the way we resolve conflict is to sit down and to have a conversation and take responsibility for our feelings, then we associate that as being normal. I mean, we see that when we get married or even in dating or even in divorce, when we go, you know, I can't believe you guys and your family did blank. That's so bizarre. Like, my family did blank, and that's normal. We associate whatever happened in our household with normal, whether it was dysfunction or whether it was harmony. And
exactly.
So it's like, you know, you have to remember that you're setting the normal for your child who will eventually be an adult and will use his or her upbringing and your marriage as a frame of reference for how to then create their own blueprint for their marriage and their family. So I think that's a kind of different consideration in that, you know, it's not just about you and how you're feeling. You also have to consider that the implications of the choices you make and how you're relating to your spouse or significant other has far-reaching implications for your kid.
And that is exactly the intention that you talked about a few minutes ago is exactly what needs to continue throughout the kids' lives, throughout our years of parenting. We have to be intentional about how we're raising our kids. We have to be thinking, what kind of home am I creating? Are we a screaming home? Are we a respectful home? What do we have? And is it matching with the values I want to teach my kids? We have to be remembering that our kids are watching at all times, that they are little sponges, and that sometimes when they bring misbehavior home from school, usually, especially the age that you're talking about right now, they bring it home and they're trying to communicate something to us. They're not malicious. They're not evil. They are really asking us. Maybe they saw something at school, and so they'll come home and do that same behavior to mom or dad. They may hear a mean name on the play yard, and they don't know what it means. So they think, well, what should I have done with that? So if I say it to mom, maybe mom will show me what to do with it. So we have to ask ourselves, why is my child doing this? They never misbehave for no reason. There's always a good reason. And we have to be kind of little Sherlock Holmes and figure out, what is my kid really trying to ask me here? So rather than reacting and saying, where did you get that? Why would you call me that name? That's a horrible word. Blah, 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 blah. That's not what we'd want our kid to do. So we have to respond to our kids the way we would hope they would respond to their friend on the play yard. So I might say to my child, wow, that word was not very nice. I don't really care for that kind of language. Wow, if you're going to talk to me that way, I'm going to go in a different room because I don't like to be talked to that way. When you're ready to be respectful, I'll be happy to hang with you. And that's exactly what I would want my kid to say to her friend. Please don't talk to me that way or I'm not going to play with you, and walk away calmly.
I think what you said about how would I want my kids to communicate with me is so important, because it's very easy. I mean, especially as they get into the tween age, 10, 11, 12, up in their middle school, it starts to feel like, hey, I got to bring down the iron fist. I'm the parent. I'm going to show you who's boss. No getting out of line. And that's fine. But I also think that, you know, you're teaching your child appropriate and inappropriate communication styles in how you reprimand them or how you praise them or your lack of praise.
Exactly. So every minute you're being a role model.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're always watching you and learning. I mean, they're processing that, okay, when I did blank, mom didn't like it or dad didn't like it, and he or she set me down and said these different things. So like you said, if your child was on the playground or at school or on the soccer field or wherever, they're able to better process that, okay, when I'm uncomfortable, when I'm frustrated, when I'm angry, this is how I process the emotion, and this is how I then communicate that so that I can connect with another person. I can talk to other people about how I feel versus talking at them.
Right, and that's what I actually use as a test for parents. I ask parents to use the test of, how would I want my kid to behave when he or she is 35 years old and in a work setting or in a relationship as an adult. And so if they're having a conflict with a friend, how would I want them to be able to handle it as an adult? Those are the tools and the skills I need to be teaching him or her today. And you bring up a really important point that I teach all the time, and that is what we call emotional intelligence. We all have feelings all day, every day. The question is, what are they called, and what are we supposed to do with them? So we have to educate our kids. Oh, that thing you're experiencing right now, that's called anger. And when we're angry, we don't stick our fists through the wall, or we don't hit a person. We don't spit in somebody's eye. These are inappropriate expressions. What we do is we label it. We realize, oh, my gosh, I'm feeling really angry. And the way I need to handle that feeling is to calm myself down, maybe remove myself from the situation so I don't do something I regret later, and then address it when I'm calmer. So we can teach those skills to our kids.
I absolutely love that. I took a class on interpersonal communication when I was in college, and my professor at the time was head over heels in love with Daniel Goleman and his work on emotional intelligence. And I often asked myself how we could really transform our society if more children were versed in emotional intelligence, because, of course, they evolve into emotionally intelligent adults. And I think what you said about labeling is super powerful, because as a child, a lot of times they're experiencing some extreme emotions for the first time, and they're not sure. I mean, they can be as old as 12 or 13 and that be their first time feeling exceptionally, like, really, really, really disappointed, almost to the point of depression. And so being able to say out loud, "I am disappointed, I'm very disappointed," is powerful, because it's not only being able to say, what is this thing? It's no longer this random thing you can't put your head around. It's now an emotion, it's disappointment, but also I can admit that that's where I am, and that's okay. And I think it really contributes to them being emotionally safe people, in that not only can they acknowledge their own emotions, but they're better able to handle the emotions of other people. It really does cultivate empathy, I think. And so having that level of awareness and that ability to say, you know what, Dad, I'm just really disappointed that I didn't make the team. And then being able to say, okay, well, you know what, I'm disappointed, and what are going to be my soothing tendencies? Because, you know, a lot of times a fist through the wall or smoking or drinking or other inappropriate behaviors are just soothing some hurt or some disappointment or frustration that they're dealing with, because they're not even completely processing that emotion. They're kind of skipping over the process and getting to the reaction. So I think really allowing them to process that and go through all of the different phases of whatever they're feeling emotionally will empower them.
Yes, and that's why I teach parents, you know, with young kids about emotional intelligence, because it's unlikely that a 12-year-old is experiencing disappointment for the first time.
Right.
It may be the biggest disappointment that they're experiencing.
Exactly.
But if they've had what we call emotion coaching, there's a great book by John Gottman called Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. And it talks about, you know, these steps and how we can emotion coach our kids through it, through a challenging emotion, and teach them what it's called. It's like, for kids, emotion is in their guts. It's in their, their, like, really in the belly region. And they feel it as a physical sensation. It's our job as parents to build a bridge between the physical sensation and the brain, and having an understanding of what that physical sensation means and what it's called, again, and what to do with it. So, and some people, you know, kids are older and they've never had that, it doesn't mean they can't learn. Even adults can still learn emotional intelligence. It's never too late. And emotional intelligence has a very high correlation with success in life. It's actually more important than IQ.
EQ
is more important than IQ, because if you can engage in a healthy interpersonal relationship, you're more likely to be able to hold on to your job, no matter how smart you are. You have to be able to relate interpersonally in anything that you do. You have to be able to get along with people and understand what's going on within the relationship or within the dynamic of what's happening at work, at school, or whatever, in order to be successful. So I encourage parents to help their kids through those challenging emotions. And very often, I have to challenge parents to look at their own emotions first so that they can not only model learning what it's called, but figure it out so that they can help their kid figure it out.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, that's an amazing point, because a lot of times we're thinking, well, you know, if we're the ones who've angered the child, we're going, well, that's his or her problem and she'll get over it and that kind of thing. But it is important that we develop a certain level of emotional intelligence for ourselves and the things that we're facing, and how our dynamics and the shifts in our lives are affecting the way we relate to our children. So I think that's a good point that also begs some questions about teens. And you and I have spent many hours discussing teens and all of their issues, and it's been really, really fabulous. And some people don't know this, but you will be doing some speaking on the Inspired Girls Success Summit Tour, and we're just so excited to have you talking to parents about how they can improve their relationships with their teen girls. But in talking with parents of teens, and I'm perhaps more versed in this area just because I've done so much research and talked with so many people, but they say, you know, my son or my daughter went upstairs at 13 and was a monster and came back down at 19 as a human being and an adult who went off to college. I have no idea what happened in between. It was just hell on earth. So what are your thoughts about how parents can, even prior to a child going into high school or a teen going into high school and getting into that whole adolescent rebellion and all of that, how can they set themselves up to succeed? And then once the student is a teen, how can they bridge that gap and nurture that relationship?
Okay. Wow. That is a huge question that, of course, we could spend hours talking on
right.
by itself. But if I could take some of the most important pieces of it, parents really begin to walk kind of a tightrope as their kids become teens and tweens because our role has to change and mm-hmm. we have to honor their need to break away from us mm-hmm. and still teach our values and still say, mm-hmm. you know, to ourselves, okay, I get that you need to rebel against me a little bit here, but it's not okay for you to bring disrespect into my home or mm-hmm. For you to get involved with people or things that are not healthy for you. It's still my job to keep you safe. So mm-hmm. giving them that rope and then pulling them back when they go too far is kind of a delicate balance at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I still encourage parents to stay on top of things and to be sure that they are making sure that their kids aren't getting into situations that they're not yet equipped to handle.
Mm-hmm.
By supervising before they go over to a friend's house. Make sure they know who's going to be there. Make sure they know that there's going to be parental supervision. I always say that the kids who get in trouble are most likely the kids who are unsupervised for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
kids just need supervision, not hovering, but, you know, that they know that they're being watched in a from a distance, and that they're being
mm-hmm.
kept safe by the parents involved. And I think parents really need to come together and support each other on this, and especially with all the media, text messaging, and the internet, and iChatting, and all sorts of internet accessibility that kids have from everywhere and anywhere, they need to be supervised very closely. Just to be kept safe at this point until they're able to make really good choices for themselves.
That's a great point. It's funny that you said that because today's letter to Lisa is actually a question about some technology type stuff. And I think a lot of parents, particularly since most parents of teens now are baby boomers, I mean, a few of them are Gen X, but most of them are going to be baby boomers, they are completely flabbergasted by the technology that their kids are using. And they're like, you know, I don't know the difference between, you know, MySpace or Facebook, and I don't know about BlackBerry Messenger or AOL, AIM, and all. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot. And if you're not in it every day, it's very easy to fall behind on the technology, you know, all the social media and social networking tools and platforms and applications that are available to teens. But I think you make a great point about supervision and safety because a lot of times teens associate supervision with someone trying to ruin the fun versus this person is trying to keep us safe. It's a
yeah.
very different frame of reference.
Well,
so
parents shouldn't be afraid of their kids getting mad at them because they think they're ruining their fun. They can say, I'm sorry that you don't like my choice, but it is really important that I keep you safe. So it's not a popularity contest. I don't need
mm-hmm.
to be one amongst the millions of friends that my daughter has. I
mm-hmm.
just need to be the parent because I'm the only mother she has.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need to make sure that my role is clear. I'm not her friend. I'm not trying to win her approval. What I'm trying to do is keep her safe
mm-hmm.
until – you know, I know, and she continues to show me that she makes good choices on her own. And, you know, the internet is likened to Hollywood Boulevard. And, you know, you wouldn't leave your kid alone on a Saturday night on Hollywood Boulevard at 12 or 13 years old because
right.
that wouldn't be safe, obviously. So
exactly.
we need to make sure that they're making good choices and that they're only talking to the kids they know from school, and that what they are saying and doing on the internet with their friends is appropriate for their age. So it just means walking by and making sure that you know what's up.
One thing that, excuse me, in talking to you that I've gathered just in the way you parent your girls and the advice that you give to other parents is this educational type parenting, which I think is just brilliant, because I was one of those teens who, for you to say, no, you can't go there because it's not safe, was not enough for me. I mean, even now as an adult, I'm still like, why though? Like, I need an explanation for everything. So even then, I was inquisitive, and I was very much a thinker. So I wanted explanations, and if I understood something, I was much more likely to go along with it and be okay with it, and even adopt it as my own value system or as my own choice. But the just because I said so method did not work with me at all. And fortunately, I had parents who were sympathetic to that and who were very willing to say, let's talk about this. Okay, you want to go to this place and you want to stay until this time. Well, we know that after this hour, you know, these kinds of people begin to show up at this place. And what if blank happened to you? And then I go, oh, wow, yeah, I didn't even think about that. Okay, cool. Well, then I will not be at that place past that time or whatever the situation was. And I remember you telling me about a situation where your daughter was watching a certain TV show and you were watching it with her and just saying, you know, did you see what that girl just did? What did you think about that? And getting her feedback and allowing her to tell you what she's thinking and feeling, because it really creates a powerful teaching moment.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of parents think, oh, my kids are going into middle school. They don't need me so much anymore. I'm going to go back to work, or I'm going to work more hours, or I don't need to supervise as closely. And the truth is that at this age, they need more supervision even than when they were little, although it's maybe just different supervision, not more or less. So I think it's really important that parents be willing to do the work and do the research and find out where are they going, who does hang out at those places at those times, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to implement a delay, I call it, when you say to your kid, you know what, I'm not sure that I'm comfortable letting you go to that place. I need to get some more information. I'll get back to you. It's okay not to say yes or no immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And to do the work and do the research and find out who's there. What kind of place is it? Where, you know, don't be afraid to do some legwork, because you might learn some really great things. And ask friends. A lot of other parents have information that you may not be aware of, and sometimes it's very helpful in making the decisions that you need to make to keep your kids safe.
I also love the point you made a minute ago about loosening the reins a bit, because I think sometimes parents struggle with, like you said, it's a tightrope of this whole dichotomy of, okay, you're becoming like an adult, you do have more freedom, now you're driving possibly, you know, you've got your own friends, you've developed this social identity and all these different things, but you still live in my household, I'm still keeping the roof over your head, you still depend on me for your livelihood, quote-unquote, even if you're working a part-time job, you've still got grades, you've still got school, you still have, you're still dealing with a lot of new things, you're discovering yourself in new ways. So it is difficult knowing how much freedom to give and how much to not give. What is your advice to parents on how to discern when to let go and when to tighten up?
That's a really good question, and it's hard to say for sure. Everybody really needs to know their own child. And I often say to my daughter, I have a 14-year-old who's a freshman in high school, and I say to her, the world is your oyster. You can have all the freedom in the world as long as you're showing me that you're making good choices and good decisions. So what parents need to do is give their kid a little rope, let them have a little space to do something that we know is safe. And when they, number one, show us that they've told us the truth, number two, they've made good choices while they were there, their friends are making good choices, that means going into the party when we drop off, going in when we pick up, seeing who's there, what are they doing, what are the kids up to, what's the kid's attitude when I walk in the room, if they're hiding from me, or if they're like, oh my gosh, you know, Molly's mom is here, you know, and they're horrified, that tells me, uh-oh, there's something that they're hiding. If I walk mm-hmm. in and they're like, hi, and they're excited to see me, or at least welcoming, maybe they're not going to be excited to see me, then I know that, okay, they're not necessarily trying to hide something. So I give her some rope, and then if she uses it wisely, then I'll give her a little more. And if she uses that wisely, I'll give her a little more. If she abuses a privilege, or if I find out there's an untruth, or I find out there's something unsafe, then that rope gets pulled back. And so parents need to be listening to their child and listening to the behaviors and watching the situations to determine how much rope that kid can handle. Some kids can handle more than others.
Well, I think that's such an intelligent approach, because I think it is kind of a thing you have to kind of graduate over time and say, you know, maybe my kid's really responsible when it comes to the internet, but not so much when it comes to coming home on time. And
right.
so it's going to be an issue where you kind of have to bob and weave and be very specific to the teen or the young adult in the situation. So I absolutely love that insight. Betty, thank you for joining me today and sharing your fresh perspective on parenting. You've been amazing. Please visit InspiredLifeRadio.com to learn more about Betty and get a link to her site, BalancedParenting.com, where you can learn more about her and the amazing work she's doing. Coming up after this, we'll have letters to Lisa, and I'll give you a sneak peek of next week's show. I'm going to have Betty stay with me and help me answer this week's letter to Lisa, as it is a parenting question. You don't want to miss that, so stay tuned.
Do you wish you could learn the secrets of achieving and become successful? Author and inspiration expert Lisa Nicole Bell has designed a goal-setting and goal-getting MP3 just for you. In this information-packed download, you'll learn how your thinking affects your goal-setting abilities, how to set goals that will serve you, how to overcome fear, how to create a plan that works to achieve your goals, how to go from success to success with ease. This download would inspire you to get going with your goals right away. No more waiting and wondering. You'll finish the download inspired and ready to make things happen in your life. Visit www.thedivinestore.com.
Welcome back to The Inspired Life. Here's your host, Lisa Nicole Bell.
All right, we are back with our letter to Lisa. Dear Lisa, my 15-year-old daughter is what I would consider a good kid. She makes good grades, stays out of trouble at school, and participates in extracurricular activities. Generally speaking, she doesn't give her dad and I any problems. Your upcoming show on effective parenting and you working with girls prompted me to write to get some advice on the situation. I caught my daughter in the bathroom texting last weekend. When I asked why she was in the bathroom texting, she said no reason. But when I glanced through her phone later that night, I discovered it was because she was receiving sexually explicit text messages from a boy. I have no idea who this boy is. Her dad and I usually meet any boy she's interested in and allow them to hang out at home instead of going out on a date. It appears that these sexual text messages have been going on for at least a month. I'm 48 and didn't have all of these gadgets when I was younger. I don't even know how to talk to her about this, much less decide on an appropriate punishment. I would love to hear your thoughts and the feedback from your guest, signed, Concerned Parent. Concerned Parent, you do have a reason to be concerned. I think this kind of goes back to something that Betty and I alluded to earlier about putting social media and social networking into perspective. Of course, that I consider texting and blogging and instant messaging and all that to kind of fall under that umbrella. But I think that you may want to spend some time educating yourself on that realm of texting and all the other social networking online. I say that because even though she's texting and that's what you found, she may have some other activities going on online or at school that are consistent with this clue that you discovered. Also, I think it's important to be aware of the evolution that texting can take on. It starts as texting, or known as sexting, and it turns into sex. So even though sometimes you go, Mom, we were just texting, you know, we're not going to do anything. Well, sometimes people want to act on the things that they're talking about doing via text. So I think it may be time for you to sit down and have a talk with her. If you haven't had the sex talk, it may be time to have that talk. If you have had it, it may be time to revisit that and really open the lines of communication so that she feels comfortable coming to you and saying, you know, I'm feeling like I want to have sex. I'm feeling like, you know, this boy is pressuring me, or I want to be cool with the girls at school. You know, there could be a lot of different reasons that she's engaging in this behavior, and I would like to encourage you to not jump to any conclusions, to not attack her, to not be accusatory in your approach, because it can be a very layered issue. And teens now are dealing with unreal amounts of peer pressure. I mean, we thought we had it. Theirs is like magnified to the 50th power. So it may be a time to just talk with her about why you feel this is inappropriate. She may not even fully understand why, you know, sending these sexually explicit text messages is not okay, or why that may be something that could cause problems for her or for this boy later on. So I would just be very candid with her about that and explore the possible reason behind the action. Betty, what are your thoughts about this?
This is definitely one of those situations I would pull back the rope a bit and really supervise closely, because, like you said, it could certainly add to behavior or be consistent with other behaviors that could be going on. Most importantly, though, I would want, as you mentioned, not for mom to get angry or to really go up against her daughter, but to really sit down with her and talk to her about feelings and what it's like to feel like a girl, and that sexual curiosity is very normal and very appropriate at her age. However, crossing the line into being sexual with a boy really adds all sorts of layers of feelings, and though it may make her feel good on the inside, we don't want her to compromise her values, and because really a girl's sexuality in her teens really is predictive of having a healthy sex life and healthy feelings about herself as an adult. So we really don't want her to, she may have gotten in over her head before she realized what was going on. So if we can help maybe even rescue her from a situation that she didn't know what to do with, but she may be curious about, and educate her and teach her values, then she may be able to pull her back and help her daughter feel safe again.
Mm. Those are great points. I agree with that. Now, she mentioned, appropriate punishment. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, a part of me sees this as a huge teaching opportunity and an opportunity to say, who are you hanging with at school? Who is this boy? Who else are you talking to that we don't know about? But I do think there has to be a communication that this is not appropriate and we will not tolerate this kind of activity in our home. How do you think that she should approach that?
Rather than a punishment, I'm thinking more of by pulling back the rope, it might be the consequence of losing her cell phone for a period of time until she can prove that she's making different choices and unwilling to engage in this kind of behavior again. So that kind of thing, that might be a logical consequence of this behavior. If she's not able to be safe with the cell phone, then she might not be able to have the cell phone at all.
So I like that you use the word consequence. I think that's great.
Absolutely. I believe in a logical consequence process rather than a reward and punishment.
Mm. Well, and I think that's a great idea, especially since she's a teen now and it is a teaching moment. And, you know, concerned parent, you said that she was a good kid and she's doing all these other really positive things. So I think in that regard, she's on the right track, and I'm sure that she cares what you and I'm assuming this is your husband think about what she's doing and the choices that she's making. So in that regard, I don't think it's any reason for you to panic. It's just a sign that it's time to have a conversation. It's time to transition into a different level of consciousness and awareness in terms of what she's feeling, and that no sexual feelings are there. And I love what Betty said about it being appropriate, not making her feel like she's nasty or weird or any of that kind of stuff. It's totally okay that she's having these feelings, but we have to put these feelings into perspective and be sure that the action that we're taking is consistent with the value system that you are instilling in her and the value system that she's chosen for herself. So concerned parent, that's what we have for you. I hope that was helpful. Please do keep me posted. And if you are in the L.A. area, you're welcome to come to the Los Angeles kickoff of the Inspired Girl Success Summit or any of the other 8 cities that will hit across the country. And I will be happy to actually give you a free ticket for you and your daughter to come, since you sent in such an intelligent question. So if you'd like to submit a letter to Lisa, email me at letterstolisa@adivinebook.com. Any identifying details will remain confidential. This week, Lisa likes persistence. If you're going to be successful in any endeavor, it's going to require persistence. I really think that you know, the shots really rarely fall exactly where we want them to in the beginning. And there's a learning curve in life as we grow wiser and more mature, and we can really apply our knowledge and leverage our past successes if we're willing to be persistent. So I think that also applies to today's show on parenting, and that definitely requires some persistence. It requires that you know exactly what type of parent you want to be and just create a vision for that, create some goals for that, create some tangible metrics. How can you measure that your parenting is indeed effective? And then persist, because obviously your child will go through phases. You will go through phases. Life definitely has its seasons, but you have to make a decision that you're going to continue and persist. So be persistent in whatever it is that you attempt to do this week. Today's giveaway is Boundaries in Parenting by Cloud and Townsend, a really, really fantastic book. I absolutely love these authors. They're also the authors of Boundaries and a book called Safe People. I very highly recommend both. So I'm sure the concerned parent who wrote in today will find the book exceptionally helpful for managing new situations with her team. So concerned parent, email us at giveaways@adivinebook.com to claim your prize. Coming up next week, I'll be giving away a copy of the Business Plan Pro software. And we are wrapping up our Entrepreneurship Secrets to Success series with a discussion on exit strategies. A lot of times we're starting businesses and growing businesses and doing all of these different things to our businesses. We want to reach the million-dollar mark and all these other things, and we forget that at some point it's got to dissolve. And how is that going to happen? Are we going to merge with another company? Are we going to go public? Are we going to sell the company? What does that look like, and how will that affect ourselves as an entrepreneur and, of course, our personal lives? So if you have a question about your personal business and how you can create an exit strategy, email me at letterstolisa@adivinebook.com with your question about how to sell, merge, or exit out of your business, and you just might win. Don't forget that the Inspired Living discount is still going on for the home study course. Lifewithinspiration.com is where you can find that. Enter ILR as in Inspired Life Radio, and you will receive a huge discount off of that course, and it really is a fantastic course. Thank you for joining me today and allowing me to be your partner in Inspired Living. I don't take it for granted that you join me every Monday, and my intent is that you are blessed and educated by Inspired Life Radio. So I want to say thank you again to my amazing guest today, Betty Alkazian. If you are a parent and you enjoyed the show, give it a listen again in the archives or on iTunes, and be sure to pass it along to other parents who may be able to use the information. That is all for this week, and until next time, be inspired.
This has been The Inspired Life with Lisa Nicole Bell. Join Lisa every Monday as she brings you a weekly dose of inspiration and fun. To learn more, visit InspiredLifeRadio.com.